So, let's talk about music. My name is Sergio Ferrer, and I'm a composer of the classical persuasion and a pianist too. And with me today, I have as my guest, Michael Boswitz-Korn, which is an interesting name to pronounce. Did I do it right?
Yeah, you did.
Okay.
That's exactly right.
Okay, great. And we have met in conferences and basically, you know, here and there in the choral world.
Yeah.
And hi, Michael.
Hi, Sergio. Thank you so much for having me. This is quite a treat.
Oh, you're welcome. The treat is mine. I've been listening to some of your music. I like it very much. So.
Well, thank you.
So let me ask you one question that I ask all composers before we start. How did you get to be a composer?
Well, my story is probably kind of unique, but I guess everybody's story is unique to themselves. I started piano, playing piano, when my grandparents had gifted my mother their old upright piano. I'm trying to remember what brand it was. That'll come back to me. I wish I remember that little tidbit. It was pretty popular at the time. But I was so fascinated with major thirds. And this is back when I was like five. So I would just sit there at the piano and I would just be, just over and over again, drove my family batty, just playing them over and over again and just loving it. And that led to piano lessons with some fabulous, fantastic teachers, Christine Specht. And then in my high school days, Walt Melter, who is somebody I will always, always love and always remember as just one of the greatest teachers I've had, both in music, at piano and in life. You know, I had a chronic illness as a kid, and my vertebrae collapsed when I was 6 years old. I had joint replacements when I was in my high school years. So I always had music as kind of my escape, and also my way of just coping with the world. I'm so grateful that my mom invested in the piano lessons as a single mother and everything. She always made sure all three of us kids had lessons, could get to lessons, no matter what. And that was really, that probably saved me in a lot of ways. So that's really how I started. I was listening to a couple of your other interviews beforehand. It was quite a treat to hear some of my friends being interviewed by you. And one thing, I forget who it was, but one thing I have in common is, you know, be inspired by John Williams. You know, and oh. I have this old gray phonograph, and the record of John Williams and the London Symphony, and Star Wars. It was an album of their performance of Star Wars. Probably had other things on there. I don't remember, but I would rearrange the living room furniture, and the sofa would be the brass section, and one of the chairs would be the strings, and the other chairs would be the woodwinds. And I would just stand in the front and I'd conduct the entire living room as if I was John Williams. So that was really where the passion came to me. In high school, I sang in the choir and sang. We sang up in Toronto. I remember, I forget what cathedral it was, but we sang Chestnikov's Salvation is Created. And that was just so glorious and so beautiful. So that was also inspiring. There was a lot of inspiration and a lot of people that really kind of were great teachers to me as I grew up.
I see. And you went to college and you studied music.
I did. I went to Ithaca College and studied music with Marianne Covert, Laurie Stobler, and Janet Galvan. And I was a music education major. I never took composition classes, took music theory, but not composition classes. Something I've always wanted to do, and that part of my education is comes in drips and drabs informally.
I see. Well, I it's very interesting. But when did you start actually writing your own stuff?
Probably in high school. I trying to remember when it was that I wrote I'll Fly Away. The published date is 2010, but I think part of it came earlier than that. Actually, I'm thinking of another piece, which was originally called the Faithful Elephants or the Faithful Elephant. It was based on a beautiful, heartbreaking book. It was fictional, but it was about this was a children's book that was really probably more for adults, and it was the lessons of what war can do to society. And it was all about a zookeeper who had to make some really horrible decisions about what to do with the large animals in the zoo as the city was being bombed. And so devastating book, but it just brought some music out of me. That became eventually that the Faithful Elephants or the Faithful Elephant rather became the Kyrie in my Requiem Dies Magnae.
I see. Okay, that's really an interesting so I mean introduction to this piece that you sent me. I'll Fly Away, according to your notes, is about the spirit one, a love the spirit of a loved one about to set free from pain and suffering.
Yes.
And that this book brought that out in you?
Well, so that's actually a different piece. So I'll Fly
Right.
Away. I did write that actually quite young. That was something that just was very different from anything else I had written at the time. But it was probably it was shortly after high school, maybe in college. Yeah, that was kind of in honor of my grandfather and grandmother. My grandfather was very ill for a
I
long
see.
time before he passed away. And so this was kind of like written in honor of both of them, my grandmother and my grandfather.
Okay. Let's how about if we hear that? So just as an aside, you were referring to the one that's called So It Was I, right? With a book.
Actually, I was the other piece I was referring to is the Kyrie is part of the Requiem Dies Magnae. I do have a piece on here that
Right.
is from the Requiem, and that is the
Yeah,
Lux
Lux
Aeterna.
Aeterna.
So
Okay.
yeah, I kind of confused things there.
All right. No worries. It's just I'm trying to get things right so that our listeners can follow what's going on.
Sure
So
thing.
this one that we're gonna hear first, I'll Fly Away, is about your grandfather. Was inspired by your grandparent, right? Your grandfather.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. All right. So we're gonna listen to it together and with our public, with our listeners.
I'll fly away, I'll fly away, I'll fly away, I'll fly away. Feel you no more, and I can touch you no more, and I can feel you no more, and I can touch you no more.
That was okay. I don't know.
That was up in Vancouver in British Columbia. There was a festival of new music, and Musica Intima is a fantastic group up there. Sings only a cappella music. I think they perform with eight voices at all times, and so they found this piece and they selected me, and this was at the very beginning of my career back in 2016, it was just such an honor to be performed in this international music festival by such a fantastic group, and they did everything that I had hoped and then some in the piece. They just really just sang it beautifully.
Yeah, it's. This is the recording of that festival?
It is, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so clean and so. And you wrote the lyrics, right?
Yeah. This is one of the few things that I actually wrote the lyrics for, yeah.
Yeah, I find that sometimes the words, one cannot find a text and one has to write it sometimes to really capture what is going on inside one. What one wants to say.
For right? Sure. This is very personal for me, because of my grandfather, because also I had the same chronic illness. I have the same chronic illness that he had. And so, for me, experience his release from pain and suffering, but then also to, think about like what it was like for my grandmother to remember the life that they shared together, it was very powerful. So I guess the words did have to come. They were personal for me.
Yeah, but it's interesting because I get the feeling, and yet to a certain degree, it's not totally sad. You know, it's like, it's like I get the impression of a transition.
Yes.
You know, it's not like a total loss. It's like something is happening and there is this transitioning happening. And it's beautiful. It's just source, you know, the whole thing just goes somewhere. So congratulations. It's kind of the structure is simple, and yet it does what it needs to do, right? The ostinato, the some parts are just repeating the same thing while the melody goes on.
Yes. And that's it has this the beginning and the end are the same. Yeah, at the beginning the person isn't passed on yet,
right?
you know, and then there's this painful part coming after that. And then this beautiful kind of like remembering how we lived together and how we loved together. You know, if we never loved, no sorrow comes, no grief no to bear, no or loss. Yet love came to me, love, it sets us free. You know, and so, and then at the end, it's after the person is set free. Yeah, so right. there is definitely a beauty to, it's better to have loved than to love and lost to than to never have loved at all. And, you know, so that's kind of what I that's how I felt as I was writing that piece.
Wow. Well, congratulations. It's really, I see why they picked it up. You know,
thank you.
And it's interesting that in the choral world, though the music has changed somewhat, it still communicates sometimes at first sight. Sometimes in the instrumental world, in the contemporary music, you have to go through a piece several times to get anything out of it. But this the first time I just sat down and heard it, and I got it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think, you know, there's these pieces that I just grew to love that I sang when I was singing in a choir. You might hear our dog in the background. Sorry about that. our kid's home and our dog is greeting them. There, when I sang in a choir, Hildegard, Frank Fairco's arrangements of Hildegard von Bingen, the motets, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Are you familiar with those pieces by any chance?
No.
Okay. No, well, they were very, when we first started them, I was like, I can't connect to it. You know, I can't really feel it. There's such depth to these pieces that by the time we sang it in the concert, it was my favorite. You know, sometimes music can come at you, you know, like you can hear something and connect with it right away. Then there's some that it takes, you know, several or more recordings or performances or listening to, you know, to make that connection. And then there's some where you connect to it, but then like you listen to it later and you connect with it at a different level. You know, and I guess there's a place for all of that. You know, some of my pieces are very straightforward. Here's what it is. But then other pieces, I'm hoping that, you know, when the choir is performing it, that a month into rehearsals, they're still discovering things about it that they like, or discovering things about themselves that they, you know, that in the music, you know, and so there's like that, there's that instant kind of like connection with the audience, but then there also might be something that grows with the singer, you know, through the course of a season in terms of, you know, rehearsing it and listening to it and preparing it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that attracted me originally to classical music, the depth of it.
Yes. You know,
there is depth, there is something, there is layers. And
for sure,
if you can put layers into it, if you can, and then if you can perceive the layers later, then you enjoy the piece for years to come. Because it's you discover the piece, and I can relate to that very well. Now, the second piece you sent me, it is So It Was I.
Mm.
Can you tell me a little bit about how this piece came about?
Yes. So It Was I was commissioned by the Esoterics, by Eric Banks and the Esoterics in Seattle. I shared this beautiful poem that my friend and poet, Ewan Tate had written. I just found it to be, just really profound, and, I just wanted to sit with it and learn more from these lines. And, you know, Eric also felt similar about the piece, you know, and about the poem. And then he said, yes, let's do that poem. Let's, you know, I'm commissioning you to write music to that poem. And then I sat down and I said, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into? Because this is a very complex poem. And so I sat, you know, through Zoom with Ewan's in Wales, and he lives in Wales, I believe. And so, you know, we sat for some time and talked about the poem, and so, you know, it was really a challenge that I'm so glad I had, because I feel like it brought out some music in me that I didn't even know was inside me. You know, like it's one of those things where it challenged me. Uh-huh. And I really like the end product. Even going into the performance, when they flew me out to Seattle, even going into the performance, I really wasn't sure what to expect. And, you know, because I tried some new things, some things that I necessarily might not have, you know, thought of doing before, but it just kind of fit the music, it fit the ideas, it fit the words, you know, the idea of stranger, you know, I met in the morning and then it was a stranger to me. You know, the stranger was a really powerful word to me because of the fact that, you know, the connection that the person who's speaking has with the person who, you know, who the person that he connects to at the end of the poem, you know, it just really, it was just very, very powerful. This whole entire thing, the struggle within the poem, the connection with somebody that he doesn't know that might be an enemy of the person, you know, and then the connection that they made in terms of just seeing each other's humanity, just very powerful.
Cool. Well, that's a great introduction. Let's hear the music now. Okay. Bravo. There is a couple of things I want to mention about the music. It's I love the handling of the harmony. Because you are not afraid to give us a big resolution every now and then. You are not afraid of, really. No, I was in a concert. I'm not going to mention the concert, but we were listening for an hour to contemporary music and it never resolved. And I was going nuts. I mean, it doesn't have to resolve in a normal way. It doesn't have to, but there is a moment that you feel tension and there are moments that it resolves, you know, somehow. You don't have to use the old means, right?
But sure, and I think that, I mean, like Ewan's poem has resolution and it has sections, you know, in terms of me, you know, comprehending, you know, and understanding what Ewan was saying, I needed those resolutions here and there. And so if I felt if I needed them, I mean, not that I was thinking about it, like, consciously, it was a subconscious thing. There's definitely places where this is an intense story, you know, civil war, fire, anger, you know, either it's internal or else it's external, you know, there's a fierce battle being played out. And then all of a sudden there's this very faint flicker, this spirit cry, you know, and there's a man that's wounded on the ground, dying. And, you know, so there's a whole entire story in here that just, you know, needs to breathe. There's darkness, there's light, you know, and of course there's also, even it doesn't end with a complete resolution, because he's helping this stranger who might have been his enemy in a battle, and he's still terrified at the end, but that's his decision that he made, you know, and the conflict does play through the entire thing. To agree with you, I felt that it was, you know, or I just, I guess I felt, I should say I felt that, because it wasn't, again, it wasn't a conscious decision, but I felt resolution in some parts of the, you know, this is one idea, this is the next idea. And so I wanted the, you know, I guess the listener, as you're saying, you as the listener, the kind of felt that way too.
Yeah, no, it's not often that I find music that is I think it reveals that your taste is very how can I say it? It's a very delicate, well balanced. I don't know if the word exquisite is exactly right, but the taste is very important, because I don't feel, even in the harshest moments of the poem, I don't feel hit by the music. Am I making, is that clear? Am I making myself clear? I don't know.
I do think so. I mean, it also goes to the beauty of the esoterics and how they really drew out, like how they prepared this. I mean, it's a part of it too. But thank you. I it means a lot to me.
No, it is very important. I would like to do something. Would you like to read the poem? So that I'll probably move it before we hear the piece, because, you know, do you have it around?
I do.
Could you read it for us? Would,
sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Or maybe even leave it now and in the program now, so that we get a little bit more aware of what we just heard, because you can make, at the end, you can make the text very easily. At the middle, because of all the, you know, counterpoint and everything, it's not that hard, that easy. So
yes, that's true. That's very true. And in fact, I think one of the fascinating things that the esoterics does is in their performances, they actually do have graphics with the lyrics up. on a screen, which I think is brilliant. I really appreciate that because sometimes I can't really grasp what
the Lay Master Chorale does the same thing, and it's very because I mean sometimes even with the best diction, even with the best performance, the counterpoint is gonna kill. It's impossible.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
you know.
Absolutely.
So if you can read it, that'll be great.
Yeah, I'll read it. This is without rehearsal. So.
Right. No.
But this is Ewan Tate's poem called "So It Was I." I met with the morning, and then it was a stranger to me. The trees shattered on the ground. The branches like the beauty of human limbs, as tender as the finger that once touched and shaped them, broken by the roar of many rages. The leaves still bleeding, water as sweet as the air tasted by the tongue, and still green from this resonant spring. All night I'd cowered in the dark, afraid, lying in terror at conflict's brutal music sounding from these far hills, as if it were my civil war, my fire, my anger being played out in these battlefield woods and fields. On the air, a spirit cry, a faint flicker. I met a young man, fighter, little more than the age of my child, lying in the wrecked grass, his gauze breath fragile, almost fading, passing like the soft breeze that troubled the threads of my hair. At that moment, there was no one else to do this. So it was I who was the reluctant, terrified healer who carried him, stranger, home.
Wow. Okay.
It's a beautiful poem.
Yes.
Beautiful poem.
That's really, yeah, it leaves you thinking. I recently did a setting of a poem written after October 7 in Israel. It's a challenge, but this is a very nice rendition of the poem. Very, very tasteful.
Yeah.
That's the word that comes to my mind.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's also interesting and very well done. So I want to thank you very much for coming and sharing some time with me and sharing some of your music. Yeah.
Sure.
Were you going to say something?
No, I just want to thank you for having me. I mean, this is it's always a treat to be able to share music, especially music that maybe is not as popular as some of my other pieces, which are more accessible. So therefore, find an audience at the high school level and middle school level, that are promoted by distributors because of the larger market size. So it's a treat to talk about the I'll Fly Away and So It Was I. So It Was I came out right before the pandemic hit. It was it got its premiere in November of or October rather of 2019. So it really hasn't been widespread yet. So I really appreciate being able to talk about it today. Thank you.
Yeah, and when you say about these pieces not being as accessible, I think, well, they're not accessible because they cannot sing them probably in as you want them sung, but as a listener, I can. It's very accessible to me.
For sure.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
I find them very accessible and beautiful, and I want to thank you very much, and I hope to see you soon in one of these events that we go to every now and then.
Yes, and, sounds good to you.
Yeah, and so that's all, folks.